Chapter 16. There, John says, touching the display, on the daylight side of the planet. Django checks the readout, corrects their course. That's Gargan too, he says with a faint frown. It's supposed to be uninhabited. If a Jedi's in trouble down there, it's not, Arla observes, and pulls her helmet on. You're staying on the ship, got it? Django pulls a face at her, but doesn't try to argue. Make sure you aim your jetpack away from the trees this time. With a growl, Arla thumps him in the shoulder. That was a once and I was distracted. Yeah, that Togruta had huge oomph. Just steer the damn ship, Arla tells him, and pries her gauntlet off his face. John, you know where we should land? Experience over the last 6 hours is more than enough to know that getting between Arla and Django is a bad idea. And John eyes the two of them, then the planet in the view screen, and then slides around Arla's other side as best he can. When he scans the map of the planet Django has pulled up, nothing immediately catches his eye, and he pauses, a little confused, then leans in closer. It's all jungle, he asks. There's something... Yeah, Django says, watching him, too thick to settle. Landing ships is hard, so there aren't even many smugglers using it as a waypoint. No need when Gargan's so close. John hums, considering the information, the green of the jungle that's quickly becoming more distinct. There's a strange edge of awareness that makes him feel like they're being watched, and he scans the planet, then tips his head. The moon. There's a jungle too, Arla points out. If you're looking for some different kind of scenery... That's not how it works, John says. I didn't have a vision, just a feeling. A feeling, Django repeats skeptically, but he heads them for the moon on the daylight side. Well, it at least looks like we'll be able to land. John nods, letting out a breath. The moon is in the right place, he thinks, and leans in, tapping the corner of the screen. Here, by this canyon. That will hide us. Interest flickers as Django flips a few switches. This pile of rust doesn't have cloaking, but I can at least hide our energy signature. Ow, Arla! Don't insult my ship, Arla tells him, and John deliberately slides out of the way and several safe steps back. The Dread is one of the newest, ugliest, and unlike your ship, she can currently fly, so... John leaves them to it, heading for the ramp as Django brings them down. He can feel the itch of urgency, like something is just about to happen, and something light, bright, vast in the Force that's coming into focus. He'd thought there was a nexus on the moon, but that doesn't seem right. It's not quite the same as the nexuses on Dagobah and Coruscant, and it's purer, more wild than most he's felt. Touching his lightsaber hilt, John presses his fingertips against the Brylark bark set into the grip, feels the hum of the crystal that echoes the one back on Concord Dawn, currently being set into Jaster's new Vambrace. Then, slow, he lets out a breath, pulls his hood up, and reaches. That vast, bright thing turns to look at him, overwhelming, luminous as a star, and John goes still. Not a nexus, he thinks, and a flicker of something like awe rises. Not a nexus, a Jedi. There's a flicker of amusement, a welcome, a question. Swallowing, John sends back a wash of agreement, a reassurance. He's coming. John, Arla asks, boots thumping down the ramp. Django spotted some kind of compound through the trees, east to west past the other end of the canyon. I don't think we were spotted, but something's definitely happening here. They've got too many cannons for me to trust it. East to west. But the Jedi with that immense Force presence is off to the south, over the lip of the canyon. John pauses, concerned, because both are important, but he needs to find the Jedi first. "I'm going to search to the south," he says after a second. "That's where the other Jedi is." Arla cocks her head, and he doesn't have to see her to know she's frowning. "That other base looks like something big, and we're technically still in the Mandalore sector. I need to go look into it. Split up?" John nods. "Be careful," he says quietly. "It's just recon," Arla says lightly, but she gives him a cocky salute as the ramp descends, then ignites her jetpack and takes off, arrowing down the canyon and keeping low to the ground. John leaps down after her, wincing faintly at the pull of muscle, then turns and heads for the canyon wall, where it's covered by a spill of greenery. It's sheer, but the leaning trees may as well form a staircase for a Jedi, and John leaps, lands, redirects, and keeps going until he's sliding over the top of the cliff and right into a cleared path. It looks like a road, John thinks, casting a glance in both directions. The canopy of trees hides it from view, and it's dim and shadowed and oddly quiet, but from the look of the bare dirt, something heavy has passed this way recently. There shouldn't be anyone settling this moon either, John thinks, and heads south, keeping to the very edge of the undergrowth. He can't hear anyone approaching, can't sense any minds except the other Jedi's, but he's wary even so, a bad feeling prickling at the base of his spine. Like eyes on him, just as there were in the sky, and he takes a breath and hopes Arla really will be careful. The Jedi is ahead of them, though, and John feels the pull too strongly to turn back. His first clue as to what is wrong is a faint shimmer through the trees, a faint glow. In the dimness, it's at least warning enough that John doesn't walk right into the barrier, but it's faint, hard to see, and that makes it a near thing. Frowning, John raises a hand to it, feels the hum of power against his palm, and pulls away before he can make contact. It cuts right across the road, blocking the way forward, and John turns and slides into the forest, following the path of it around a long curve. The forest is still strangely silent, like there's no animal life anywhere close, and John doesn't like the hush at all. It feels unnatural, eerie. And then, right where the trees end and open grass starts, John comes to a halt. The shield keeps going, cutting a long arc across the open field. There's a building within it, squat gray stone and heavy cannons, and a pair of transports to one side. One of the cannons has had its barrel completely twisted, though, and the other is on its side, like some vast hand pulled it over. Outside the barrier, deep craters pepper the grass, and between them, settled on the ground with her legs crossed beneath her, is a small, Sephi woman in cream and gold robes, her long brown hair swirling in the breeze. John pauses for a long second, then picks his way across the cratered ground, minding his steps. There's a body just inside the barrier, still breathing but unconscious, and John eyes the armor, the sign painted on the chest plate, and can't bring himself to feel much pity. He knows how the Death Watch operates. "Master," he says politely as he approaches, and the woman opens her eyes, as gray as a storm cloud, and smiles as she rises to her feet. "Master," she returns, equally steady, and inclines her head. "I'm Fae." "John Antilles." John looks from her to the barrier, the ruined cannons that are most certainly her work, and asks, "You can't get through?" Fae shakes her head. "The barrier makes it hard to reach through. They have another master they're holding, though. I felt her capture 3 systems over." If the other base is so obvious in its affiliation, Arla will realize this is a Death Watch operation quickly. Given that she and Jango are Jaster's children, and valuable as hostages, it would be best to leave soon. John considers the barrier, unease turning in his stomach. He could get through. He has the skills, but... "You're injured," Fae says suddenly, and takes a step forward. The lift of her hand is enough to make John flinch, not expecting it, and she pauses, watching him steadily. I healed most of it, John says quietly, after a moment. The lift of her brow is entirely unimpressed. Incautious healings can leave scar tissue on your organs, she says. Allow me. John grimaces, but nods and steps closer, and Faye catches his hands in her own, closing her eyes. The feel of her, the force of her, is an endless, gentle thing, a direct tap into the web of the force itself, and John has never felt anything similar. It slides into him, fills him, and he closes his eyes on a breath, peace washing over him like sunlight. Every moment spent trying to open himself to the force is a pale shadow compared to Faye's existence, and it's beautiful. Thank you, he says hoarsely, and Faye hums, opening her eyes. There's a strange intensity in her face, hard to look at straight on, but after a long moment, she lets go. The force speaks to you as it does to me, Master Antilles, she says, and it's thoughtful, light. Thank you for answering my call. John doesn't quite know how to respond to that, but he nods, turns his face toward the barrier. When he tries to reach through it, nudge at the fallen canyon, it feels like he's trying to motion across a vast distance, and he stops after a moment. The fact that Faye was able to destroy the cannons in the first place is already impressive, and there's no way he'll be able to touch anything inside from out here. He doesn't need to stay out here, though. Dark Woman made sure that no barrier would be enough to stop him. Taking a deep breath, John comes to a stop bare centimeters from the shield, raising his hands. The hum of the barrier prickles against his skin like numbness, but he narrows his eyes, reaches for the flow of the force, and finds it comes easily. It curls through him, the piece of it that makes him up, resonating with the rest of the universe, and he breathes with it, lets himself slide into it fully, and takes a step forward. The barrier exists in the force just like everything else, one more piece of energy in a universe full of them. John makes himself the same energy, steps through it, and then lets go of the power on a breath. From inside, the heavy thrum of another Jedi's pain is all too obvious, and John heads for the door of the base without looking back. He doesn't pause to try the keypad beside it, just slides through that door as well, then unclips his lightsaber from his belt and brings it up, letting his awareness slide out into the force. Everything outside the shield is muted, even Faye's impossible strength, but everything within it is clear. He follows the pain, the tug of urgency, down two long corridors and up a set of steps, then around a corner. A blaster bolt flies right for his face, but in a wash of green, John deflects it, spins. He cuts right through heavy armor, takes the woman's head, and then her partner's as he lunges from behind their cover. There's a cry, a flurry of blasters, and John sweeps a hand up, out, sends them all spinning right back to slam into the far end of the hall as Death Watch soldiers scatter. A man with a vibrosword snarls a challenge, lunging, and his blade sweeps the place where John's head just was as John drops, slides out of the way with a whirl of cloth, and brings his lightsaber up, cutting right through the sword. The man shouts, throws the hilt at him, but John catches his armor with a motion, slams him into the wall, and leaps past him. There are four Death Watch troopers at the end of the hall, blockading the stairs. John comes up in a hail of blaster fire, grabbing, pulling. The jungle outside comes in and buries the four in roots and growing trunks and poison thorns. Lightly, John leaps across the blockage of trees and vines, then keeps going. He can't feel anyone else close except for the injured Jedi, and he moves quickly, cuts through the door at the top of the steps and kicks it down, then sweeps into the small room. Down, a woman barks, but John is already moving, diving low and rolling beneath a blaster bolt that tears deep into solid stone. A droid lumbers out of the corner, firing, and John blocks the shots with his blade, reaches. One hard wrench grabs the droid, and John closes his fingers sharply. Metal crumples with a scream and a crunch, and John drops the thing, then heads for the control panel on the wall and shuts down the barrier. There's a lightsaber hanging beside a tangle of keycards, and he takes it with a flicker of anger that he tries to let go. Inside the cell, a Bothan woman staggers to her feet with a groan, her fiery red fur matted with blood, her robes torn. "Kid," she says with relief, "I can't even begin to tell you how happy I am to see a friendly face." John wavers, torn between the urge to go and help her and the desire to skitter back, to pull his hood down further and stay firmly out of reach. He doesn't know what to say, how to respond, so he doesn't try, but when it looks like the woman is having trouble walking, he steels himself, then crosses the space between them and leans down to pull her arm over his shoulders. "Oh, carking hells," the woman hisses, but she moves with him, groans, and starts walking. "I don't know why the hell you humans have to be so tall, Criff." "Sorry," John says quietly, but the woman waves him off, baring her teeth as they carefully start down the steps. "The fault of those bastards, not you," she says, a little breathless. "Tried to ransom me back to the damn temple. What do they think we are, senators?" A ransom. Something turns, wary, in John's chest, and he looks ahead of them, past the bodies of the Death Watch soldiers, towards the door. Not far, but... The Bothan woman is hurt, and suddenly it seems absolutely vital that they get out of this place, off this moon entirely, as soon as possible. "Hang on," he says, and pulls the woman in tighter, hears her hiss, but doesn't pause. Reaches, like he's stepping through space, but this time he grabs for the space itself, two pieces of the Force, and he just pulls. Space folds, and John hits the ground on one knee right next to Faye, breathing hard. Taking another person across folded space isn't something he's ever tried before, and his head is spinning, aching. He winces, and there's a low groan as the woman slumps, fur rippling. "Criff," she gets out. "Who the hell scraped that trick out of a history book?" Before John can answer, there's a shudder. The barrier flickers, then starts to grow, and John feels a flare of alarm, grabs one of the woman's arms as Faye grabs the other, and bolts. Behind them, the barrier keeps expanding, eating across the ground, and it washes red, darkens, shudders, detonates. One bone-shaking boom that hits them with a shockwave of force throws John right off his feet. Faye cries out, the Bothan swears, and there's a heavy groan, a tree falling. It drops right behind them, and Faye hauls John up and back, drops behind the tree, and pulls the Bothan down as well. "Master Venari," she says breathlessly, "we meet again." "Master Faye," the woman says, and coughs. "Wood isn't going to do a lot against blasters. We need to move." "You can barely move," Faye retorts, and presses her hands to either side of Venari's head. It makes Venari wince, but she stays where she is, and John hauls himself to his feet, checks the base, and finds nothing but a pile of tumbled stone. "A trap," he thinks grimly. "This feels like a trap, and one set for a Jedi." "That barrier," he says, "what was it?" Venari shakes her head. "Frequencies," she says, and takes the lightsaber John offers her with a grunt of thanks. "Frequencies and electricity. They didn't say more than that. I could get through if I tried, but not far and not for long." "Unstable to explode like that," Faye observes quietly, and lifts her hands. "Null?" "Still got a magic touch," Null says wryly. "I'm fine now. Got a ship?" "Nearby, just above the canyon," Faye confirms, and rises, pulling Noel up with her. "John?" The Death Watch was trying to catch a Jedi, John thinks, and breathes out. "My companions' ship is in the canyon. They don't know that this is a Death Watch base. I need to warn them." Faye looks at Noel, who cocks her head, then snorts. "Lead the way," she says. "The more of those bastards I can keep from having a good day, the better." John nods, lengthening his stride as he hurries through the trees. The road is still empty, but he can hear engines in the distance, closing, and that same sense of a threat, of eyes on them, curls through his nerves. Arla, he thinks, and breathes in. Django will be in danger too, if they find him, but Arla is the one out in the open. "How did they even find you, Noel?" Faye asks, and when John casts a glance back, she's just pulling her hood up, the pale cloth bright against the deep green forest. "Why were you in Mandalorian space?" Noel snorts. "I wasn't. Two squads of them jumped me in the middle of an undercover mission, drugged me to high hell. I woke up here." Bait, John thinks grimly. It seems too much a coincidence that the Death Watch would capture a Jedi to ransom to the temple just days before Jaster's wedding. Either to lure John here, or to undercut Jaster's plan to use the marriage for recognition, or even both. John likely should have sensed the trap before they sprung it, but he hadn't. He comes to a stop at the rim of the canyon, then leaps down, slowing his fall just enough to land lightly, hears the twin thumps of Noel and Faye following after. "That's a Mandalorian ship," Noel observes, just a little cooler than before. John doesn't look back. There's movement at the top of the ramp, and he heads forward, ducks beneath the edge, and says, "Django, where's Arla?" There's a pause, and then Django limps forward. John caught him in the middle of pulling his armor on, but he's already thin-lipped and pale, looks like he's more likely to fall over if he steps wrong than stage a daring rescue in the jungle. "Her comm went out," he says grimly, and almost trips. John has to catch him, guide him down to sit on the ramp, and he's breathing hard just from getting his armor on, has to drop his blaster rifle beside him and lean forward, trying to catch his breath. "She said, looks like Death Watch." Faye crouches down on Django's other side, making him twitch. "Take Noel," she tells John. "I don't carry a lightsaber, so I'm more useful here." John nods and thanks, then rises, turns. Noel grins at him, all sharp teeth, and asks, "Chummy with Mandalorians now?" "Yes," John says quietly, not about to argue with her over this. After a moment, though, Noel huffs a laugh, lengthens her stride to fall in step with him, a loping, easy run that covers more ground than John would have thought it could. "All right, all right. No need to talk my ear off about it. I assume yours is another Mandalorian." John inclines his head. "Black and white armor," he says. "Arla Fett." There's a pause, surprised, and Noel makes a sound of interest. And that Django Fett, I'm guessing. The Mandalore's kids, not who I would have expected a Jedi to cozy up to. "I'm going to be their stepfather," John thinks, and it's still far too alien a thought to say out loud, so he keeps it to himself. "I'm staying with the Mandalore." Noel turns that over for a moment, silent and assessing. Before she comes to a conclusion, though, John catches a shout, drops low. Noel flattens herself in the bushes beside him, perfectly still, and John holds his breath as a squad of Death Watch troopers emerge from the jungle to their left and cross in front of them. They head down a long slope, following a track of beaten earth, and when John slides forward on his belly to look, he can just see the edge of the compound that caught Arla's attention. "Like ants," Noel mutters, wrinkling her nose as she eyes the size of the sprawl of buildings, half hidden by the trees. "Destroying that place is going to take a lot more than three Jedi, even if one of them is Fey." "It's a trap," John says quietly, and pushes up, sliding deeper into the bushes where they'll be out of sight. Noel grunts. "Got that part," she mutters. "But why? The Death Watch moving up their plans to conquer all of known space?" John doesn't answer, but guilt curls in his stomach. Arla is in danger, Noel was captured, and odds are it's because Tor Vizsla realized what Jaster was attempting and rushed to beat him to it. Odds are it was because of John's presence in all of this. "All right, Chatterbox," Noel says after a moment, but when John slants her a wary look, she just seems amused, intent. Her eyes are fixed on the edge of the compound, where it vanishes into the side of the hill, and she cocks her head and says, "There are open flames behind that door." John looks from her to the wall, not sure how she can tell, but entirely willing to believe her. Door. Follow me. Noel pushes herself over the small rise, drops down into the undergrowth, and slides forward, quick, silent steps. John follows closely, wary of any more Death Watch soldiers emerging from the jungle, but there don't seem to be any close. A guard passes along the top of the wall, but her eyes are trained elsewhere, and Noel manages to get right up to the wall and tuck herself into the shadows. John joins her, pulling his cloak around himself, and Noel gives him a smirk, her fur rippling. You're not the only one with tricks, kid. Ready? Curious, John tips his head, and Noel turns away. Her eyes unfocus, and she takes a breath, curls her fingers, brings her hands up, tracing a circle in the air. Then, with a hiss, she throws her hands out, and John can feel the sudden fear of the minds behind the door, the panic. A door hidden in the stone flies open, and he hits the man staggering free hard, drops him, and spins to grab the other. A hard punch knocks him out, and John ducks after Noel into the light of multiple fires burning over wood and fabric. Sloppy, Noel says, wrinkling her nose, and flicks a hand, extinguishing the flames in an instant. Are they just using torches for aesthetic? Griff, if anyone finds out they kidnapped me, I'll be a laughingstock, no matter how many Wookiee bandits I take out. John ducks out of what must be a break room of sorts, casts a look up and down the torchlit corridor. Arla is somewhere here, he thinks, and takes a breath. She's this way, he says quietly. Noel doesn't attempt to argue, just falls into step, one hand tight around her lightsaber hilt. Like working with Faye, she mutters. You both are the reason people call Jedi creepy. John considers that, considers her. Talking back, he thinks, and it turns like fear in his belly, but she's not Dark Woman. None of her reactions so far have suggested she's like Dark Woman. Says the Jedi who just used fire like a physical thing, he says, quiet but pointed. Noel pauses, and John tenses faintly, but after a second she laughs, reaches out. John only just manages not to jerk when she thumps him lightly on the shoulder, and from the way Noel's gaze sharpens, she notices. She doesn't say anything, though, just keeps moving, and says over her shoulder, "We can both be freaks together, then. Why else would we stick to the Outer Rim?" "People need help here," John says softly. And Noel slants him a look that's hard to read and tips her head like he just made her point. Name, she asks. John Antilles, he says, and Noel huffs. Good for undercover work, she says, more or less cheerfully. Which way? John considers the corridors, then turns right, deeper into the cliffside. He can't feel Arla directly, but there are a lot of minds here, a lot of emotion, and it's enough to put him on edge, even beyond the steady whisper of a threat all around them. This place feels wrong, Noel mutters at his shoulder, her nose wrinkling. I know the Death Watch goes for the bottom of the barrel, but these bastards are stinking up the whole planet with their offal. Entirely in agreement, John grimaces faintly, then turns down another torchlit hall. There are footsteps somewhere close, but not coming towards them, and he slips through a patch of shadow, then ducks into a narrow room that's only lit by a hollow table in the center. Before he can make for it, Noel catches his arm, hauls him sideways and behind a bank of computers, and John jerks, pulls, runs right into familiar armor as Arla hisses and drags him down next to her. End of chapter 16.